It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Wozy dozy. Whoa, everybody. Welcome to the Celtics Post Game Show on CLNS Media. I'm John Duke here. We're gonna be here for you tonight until 12:30, or at least until the callers just don't come anymore. But we got quite a situation on our hands, folks, because the Boston Celtics, yes, your Boston Celtics, are leading the Eastern Conference Finals 2-0 over the hated and also reviled Cleveland Cavaliers. The Celtics win tonight 107-94 in a game that the Celtics really didn't have much of a lead for much of the first three quarters. And then, well, let's just say they just kept chipping away. And then, of course, ultimately pull away with a 13-point win in the end. It started off with a tremendous start from LeBron James. LeBron was, he was LeBron, looking like just like the guy that we all read about and write about and hate to even consider would be coming at us. And yet, there we go. We're at a situation where we have to face LeBron. What do we do? How do we stop him? And unfortunately, in the first half, there wasn't a whole lot of answers for the Celtics. They were really looking like a team that was maybe not even going to be rated to – They took the punch from the Cleveland Cavaliers in the first half. And while they were only down by four at halftime, I think a lot of people were feeling like they could get there. But, boy, LeBron was so aggressive, so getting, you know, so after it. And for us, I think for Celtics fans, we're all just hoping and praying that eventually LeBron would cool off and the Celtics would be able to push ahead. Calvin, are you on the line with me?
I should be. Am I here?
You are here. What were your thoughts here in the early going here of this game, and as the Celtics were kind of climbing back into this game here in the first half?
Well, like you said, early off, LeBron went off, and I think like the main difference what I saw in LeBron early on between what he was doing here and what he did in game one is like he went really quickly with his offense. He took a couple of threes that were just a mile out, but he would, you know, the second he caught the ball, he already either heading toward the basket or he was making a three before the Celtics could really set with their defense. And he put up a lot of points quickly that way. And I thought that he tried to slow it down a little bit in the second half and really allowed the Celtics to get set in their defense in a way that like made it more difficult. Apparently, as much as I thought that Marcus Morris was really going to have to eat his words before this series started, even through two games, I know you look at LeBron's numbers and you go, oh, he had a great night. But when you sat down and watched that game, like Marcus Morris really did a great job on him again. And so far through two games, so good for Marcus Morris.
Marcus Morris, I think the early going missed a couple shots early on. I was feeling like, is this, you know, are we going back to the old Marcus Morris? But he really recovered himself, much like really many of the Celtics did in the second half. And really, I thought they put together a performance there as we were kind of nearing, third quarter and even beyond, really in the fourth quarter, taking control. Marcus Morris's efforts, and particularly, I think this single image of this game is that and one that he got and the scream and the yell in Tristan Thompson's face. Sure, it earned double techs, but boy, wasn't that the cathartic yell that so many Celtics fans were hearing throughout the first half of this game, just wanting to scream, and finally things were starting to break ahead for this team.
So you like that better than the Horford Duncan flex? There were some moments.
There were. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Duncan flex is hard to turn that down. You're absolutely right. The ferocity in the face, you really didn't see the flex much until after the highlights. So, and I'm kind of used to the flex, you know, I'm here for it. I've kind of gone there, and it's just, you know, it's fine. It works, but for me, I'm still I like the yell and the scream in people's face, you know.
I'm going Horford because, like, it's Marcus Morris is who's kind of what I expect that from. Well, I don't expect Horford to really be that showy, and it was nice to see, you know, the stoic Al Horford, like, actually care. I know he cares, but, like, actually show it out on the court. It was kind of a nice change of pace for him specifically, but I hear what you're saying.
No question. We're going to be taking your calls here tonight, everybody. The number 347-215-7771. We're going to get to your calls here in a little bit after we get through, you know, kind of talking about the game and how things are shaking down, what we saw tonight. But we definitely want to hear from you. We want to get your thoughts, and we're looking forward to really breaking down this game as the Celtics really put the smack down on the Cavs. I mean, we're going to obviously get some callers in and get their thoughts on this, but Calvin, I want, you know, going into the, what was your impressions going into the game? Let's pull it out. Let's go in the time machine, get in the DeLorean, go back 3 hours. Did you view this game as a must win game for the Boston Celtics? Did they have to pull this off to really feel like you had a chance to win this series? Or were you seeing maybe something else out of Cleveland, feeling like you could get something done in Cleveland?
I did not look at this as a must win, but I also did not look at it as a must win for Cleveland either. I'm not going to come out and maybe it's because I'm not a Celtics fan. I'm so more of an outsider, you know, / detached observer. But I'm just going to come out and say it, and maybe we'll get these calls. I'm sure we will. And maybe I'll even hear it from you. This series, I don't think this series is over at all. I don't think if I'm a Celtics fan, I can relax and put my feet up and say, well, you know, how do we match up with the Warriors? I don't know. We might get that call tonight. But I would caution anyone who thinks this series is over. You won two games at home, and that's great. And you won them in impressive fashion. But until you win a game in Cleveland, I'm not convinced the series is anywhere close to being over.
LeBron James is that we talked about Scary Terry, you know, being like the horror film, you know, kind of that image from the horror films. LeBron James is the horror film. He is he is Jason. He is, you know, Leatherface. He is, you know, all those guys, Freddy Krueger, all in one, because you know that he has done this time and time again. He has come back and really made you thought you had it, and then you didn't. And I think that's why I think for all of us, I got a text I sent this text, this tweet out at the early part of game one, and I still believe it. Until the final buzzer of game four, you know, or the fourth win, I'm not going to count out LeBron James. I think just like you. I mean, look, they're great. The Celtics are playing great. I like where they're headed. I think they could go to Cleveland and take one there. None of those things concern me, but until LeBron James is dead in the ground, dirt on top, you know, the whole spiel. Until all that's done, I'm worried. I'm not worried, but I'm not counting him out by any stretch. And I don't think any rational basketball fan can do that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, all that being said, though, there are a lot of trends that are pointing in Boston's direction. And yeah, you know, some of it has, they have played better at home over the course of these playoffs, but just sort of, if you look at the way these teams have matched up, obviously they've won the two games, but even beyond that, the fact that they're, you know, holding this extremely high scoring Cleveland team, two incredibly low scoring outputs, they're essentially playing, they're imposing their will on the Cavaliers instead of being the Cavaliers at their own game in a way that, like, you can make the argument might be unsustainable. The fact that both of these games have been played at the Celtics' pace and not at Cleveland's pace really does bode well for the length of the series. I will sort of, to take the other side of what I just said a minute ago. Yeah, I do see, like, why you would be optimistic at this point.
But you're right, though. That's, there are. The trends are all going in one one very positive direction for the Boston Celtics. I mean, there's not a whole lot that you can step back and say, well, you know, Cleveland's got this going. I mean, after game one, there was a lot of talk of, well, you know, they missed a lot of open shots, and well, you know, this, and well, they, you know, they can play Tristan Thompson, and that should be effective for them, and they, well, they could do this. Basically, I mean, and maybe our callers will tell us differently, and they can, and look, hey, 347-215-7771, tell us where we're wrong. But I'll tell you what I think. I think Ty Lue just, you know, used the only card he had up his sleeve. How many different what other adjustments does Ty Lue have up his sleeve other than to go big and try to throw a lot of rebounding at the Celtics? I mean, in some cases, you could almost say they used it too early, and if they had maybe waited till game three, well, now they got something different to throw at Boston. Now you used it game two, they're going back home. The only thing they can plan on is that the fans at the queue are going to be, you know, enough to carry the Cleveland Cavaliers across the finish line. And I don't have a whole lot of faith there. And this is a Celtics team that was a better team on the road than they were at home all season long. So why would that be any different here as we get into the playoffs?
I mean, I think there are things they can do to play differently, right? They can play some more of their guards. They can play, you know, Rodney Hood and Clarkson and Osmond a little more to try to sort of match up with the smaller lineups that the Celtics are doing. They seem to be committed to this whole Tristan Thompson experiment, but I don't think, you know, the thing about Tristan Thompson is he played 30 minutes, right? Let me see how many rebounds he had. Yeah, he had 7. He had 4 offensive rebounds, but I don't feel like Tristan, when I'm watching the game, especially because Horford has the ability to pull him away from the basket, to my mind, his rebounding advantage against this particular team is not strong enough to justify him spending 30 minutes in the game. I understand that, like, Lou's committed to some sort of old school version of what the Cavaliers were, but I don't think Thompson is that player anymore. I would, you know, definitely consider taking his minutes down, because I don't think he can really guard anyone. He can sort of guard Al Horford, and maybe you say, okay, when you take him out of the game, we saw sort of Al Horford go off in that fourth quarter when, you know, Kevin Love was on him even Nance, but I still would just sort of take my chances with Al Horford ISO possessions, because the Celtics aren't going to do that enough for that to matter anyway. Like, Al Horford's never going to, you know, post an ISO and get, you know, 35, 40 points just because that's not the Celtics offense. So I don't feel like they're gaining enough offensive rebound wise to even put him out there for sort of that length of time. How do you feel about that?
No, I couldn't agree more. I thought, you know, the adjustment they made in the first half, you know, they thought, okay, well, this is, all right, let's see how this goes. And LeBron made all of his shots from the outside. His Thompson's presence on the interior really, I think, added an extra body that prevented a lot of driving lanes for Cleveland's offense. So driving kick wasn't there. Then they tried to, you know, strong side and then run the little two-man game there in the second half with Korver and Love, which worked a little bit when Baines was on the floor, and they kind of had that mismatch because, you know, the Celtics still had their big guy in there when Cleveland had gone small. But I can't really think of many other opportunities, particularly as the game progressed, where Thompson was more effective. And then, most notably, I think, in the fourth quarter, when you know, Brad Stevens threw Smart on Thompson and used that as the mismatch to try to blow up the play and to blow up the pick and roll coverage, and it worked. There was, you know, I think three straight plays where Smart being on Thompson completely befuddled the Cavs and left them really scratching their heads. Now maybe there'll be an adjustment to that, but again, I don't see a whole lot of arrows left in the quiver for Ty Lue at this point. And even if you do bring Tristan Thompson back in, I think the Celtics might have figured out a way to kind of defend that and throw a bigger, burly body in the embodiment of Marcus Smart, who, again, just makes play after play after play that boggles the mind and makes you all want to just sign over your paychecks now as contribution to the Celtics re-signing him this summer, because what a tremendous effort again and again and again he makes towards winning plays for this team.
I mean, that ball that he stripped from behind, where he just basically dove and laid out, or it just looked like the possession was over. Yeah, that was incredible. But you make a great point about him on Thompson too, because the thing about the Cavaliers' big men, you know, other than Kevin Love, is that, like, you know, him and Nance, Thompson and Nance, neither one of them are post-up players, so you can put a Marcus Smart on him. Yeah, you know, Kevin Love had a good game, and there were a couple of situations where they managed to, you know, flood the other side of the court and get Kevin Love some ISO situations where he could bully a smaller defender. But, like, that was – it was few and far between. And when the Celtics double – here's the other thing. It's like the Cavaliers have become so much – so predictable with their passing, where they're slowing it down. You saw in that second half, like, you know, when the guy gets the ball on the weak side and you know he's going to – you know, a cutter is going to come in, the Celtics players are so much faster that how many passes did they intercept in the third and fourth quarter of that game, where they're just stepping right in front of the passing lane? The Cavaliers offense is so stagnant because they're all watching, you know, the guy try to post up in that scenario. Even if Kevin Love, you know, scores a fair amount, he's still going to turn the ball over enough to make it valuable for the Celtics. And we really saw that, you know, in the second half of that game. It's like, and on the other hand, the Cavaliers, because they're so much slower than the Celtics, aren't creating any turnovers at all. There's almost no ball pressure on the Celtics in this game. Terry Rozier, you know, essentially does when he gets the ball in his hand, he's just doing whatever he wants. There's nobody hounding him. He gets to the rim. There's nobody who can stay with that guy on the court right now because nobody's as fast as he is.
He's amazing. I thought we're gonna get to the callers. We again give you the phone line to call in. 347-215-7771 is the number to call in and talk to us. We're gonna get to some of you guys in just a minute here. Talking about Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier, I thought, had been pulled out of the game mentally the last two games. Game five against Philly. And then here in game one on Sunday against the Cavs, I don't feel like we got the Terry Rozier we were used to. And even in the first half, Terry was not the Terry that we've been used to. I think in the third quarter, something clicked for him finally where, look, he finally got some shots going, started feeling better about his game, feeling better about himself, and then that unlocked a whole bunch of things for the Boston Celtics. They tried to, you know, have some lineups with him as you know, working with Tatum in the second quarter, and that was an abject failure. And that was an opportunity when LeBron's off the floor, and they really needed to have, you know, Corey to push, you know, really catch up to them at that point. Didn't work. The third quarter, completely different dynamic. Terry gets on the break, starts with some threes, and then that spurred everything for him, I think. And I think really that little bit of energy then really gave the team a little bit extra boost and that scoring punch they needed to get over the hump in the fourth.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is you know, a lot of his struggles to seem to – somehow it's like it seems an unreasonable amount of LeBron switching on to Terry Rozier for whatever reason, mm-hmm. based on that. Yeah, so I think that might be a part of it. But I think when he got going is like when – like he's at his best when the Celtics offense is at its fastest pace. And I think it's like some of those turnovers created, you saw him flying down the court. I think that's like what Terry Rozier wants to do. Other than that and catch and shoot threes are like – those are his bread and butter, right? Or you know, being on the three-point line, having a man run out on him and just being able to blow right past him. I think that's what he wants to do at his best. You're right. He sort of has been up and down during these playoffs, but you know, when he's been up, he's really been up. In that second half, he really had some moments. I don't really have, you know, much negative to say about him. I don't really have that many negative things to say about anybody. I'm trying to think who do I feel like didn't have. I mean, yeah, Smart took a couple of Marcus Smart shots, right? That's the one thing I could go, but I mean, it's such a like same old story that I'm not even interested in like saying, well, Marcus Smart should have taken X better shot in X scenario, because you sort of have to live with that at this point.
The line for Marcus Smart tonight: 11 points, 5 rebounds, 9 assists, 0 turnovers, 4 steals. three personal fouls, a team best plus 21. That's Marcus Smart. I mean, that was a better shooting performance, maybe a few more assists than we're used to for Marcus, but you know, I would say consistently in this game, he was the best player. I think we had great efforts from a number of different players. Tatum had a really small section there where he was cooking a bit. Rozier obviously had that great third quarter. Horford had a great effort in the fourth quarter. Jaylen, tremendous first quarter, really trying to answer what LeBron was doing. But if you probably take the totality of that game, the best player for the Celtics from beginning to end was Marcus Smart. He was the guy. And, of course, again, he makes those plays that really do change the course of the game. And that's, I think, you know, that's really where you, you know, you have to tip your cap to him. Before we do take some callers, any thoughts that you had about the effort of Jaylen Brown tonight? 23 points, team high, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, you know, 1 steal, 1 turnover in the game, but, you know, shooting 50%, really playing some really outstanding defense for the Celtics.
He really was playing outstanding defense. I will say, not so much about Jaylen Brown, but I did want to touch on, I mean, I will touch on Jaylen Brown briefly, but I did want to say that, like, yeah, to your point about Marcus Smart, I thought the best player in that game was actually Horford. And just because of his ability to switch, like he guarded everybody in that game. He was covering so much ground on the defensive end. He was more aggressive on the boards than he is sometimes, although he's sort of been that player during these playoffs. Just sort of as a tribute to sort of the way Horford's been playing in general. But, like, in this game in particular, I know it's, like, part of it is he had, you know, those 3 baskets in a row at the sort of crucial point in the fourth quarter. So maybe that's sticking in my memory as well. But it's just really more defensively. He was so impressive to me the way sort of he managed to keep just multiple guys in check just by his ability to just be the secondary guy and then rotate back out before – the Cavs could take advantage of the fact that they were, you know, creating space. Yeah, I thought he was all over the place. Jaylen Brown, you know, had, like you said, a very effective start as well. He was doing a great job moving without the ball. They were finding him for a lot of open shots. Yeah, and he did play good defense. A couple times he was overmatched physically. Like, I don't love Jaylen Brown against LeBron. I guess I like him more than I do Tatum on LeBron. But I mean, I'd rather see Marcus Smart even on LeBron, even though, you know, LeBron's going to shoot over him. But tricking LeBron into taking, like, some of those fadeaways that he took in the second half, like, he hits those, that's fine. It's like, it's just having this conversation about, like, Durant and James Harden the other day. Like, you can trick a guy. I mean, look, you can't stop a superstar at that sort of level. But if you can sort of reduce their offense to, you know, this guy taking a difficult two-pointer over and over again, no matter how many he hits, like, it's going to slow their offense down enough for it to be valuable to you. And I sort of felt like they lulled him. Everyone stayed with their man off ball. Except for there was that period of time where Korver, was getting free a couple of times on a couple of looks that I didn't love the defense there briefly. But outside of that sort of second quarter area where that was happening, the discipline of the Celtics, I think, might be the most impressive thing about this team.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I am probably unfairly giving Horford some negative marks in the first half when I felt like the team was a little bit disorganized and not reacting well, perhaps, to how Cleveland had adjusted in adding Thompson and not really finding their balance. I never really felt like they found their balance in much of the first half. Particularly defensively, it felt like they were always just a step late and not quite where they wanted to be. And you know, I felt Cleveland had more control out there than they should have. Even though Boston was seemingly, if they could get that step quicker, they would have won this game by 25. I mean, obviously Boston went on quite a run the fourth quarter, but it felt like if they could have played just a little bit tighter in that first half, a little bit tighter defense, I felt like things might have broken a little bit better for him, and probably I'm marking him unfairly for that. So, fair enough, Calvin. I think that's a good point. Let's let's go to some callers. But before we do, we got to remind you that tonight's show is brought to you by Mack Weldon. And Mack Weldon's a premium men's essentials brand. It believes in smart design and premium fabrics. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants and more you will ever wear, ever, ever. Okay, they don't say ever for no good reason. And when we talk about absolutes, you got to pay attention. So when we're saying that Mack Weldon is a premium essentials brand, that means, like, listen, this is good stuff. And here's the best part about this. If you want to get – so the first order you take, you get 20% off, all right? You go to MackWeldon.com. You enter the promo code CLNS, okay? MackWeldon.com, CLNS. Enter that checkout. You get 20% off. I mean, that's crazy. You go into the stores now. If you're getting 5% off, you're feeling good. 10%, I'm a winner. Okay, 20% off MackWeldon.com. Promo code CLNS. You do that, you get the good stuff, the premium fabrics, the underwear, the shirts, the hoodies. I mean, it's all right there. So go there, MackWeldon.com. Promo code CLNS to check out. All right, Calvin. You know, we also have. Coming along the ride for us tonight is Nick Sacento. Nick is with us, rocking out in the and doing some good stuff there. We're glad to have Nick with us, and hopefully Nick will chip in here as we're going through some of these calls. But let's start banging through some of these guys. Are you ready to do this, Calvin?
Let's do it. Nick's going to say something ridiculous, I promise you.
I love it. That sounds good. First off, let's go to Jesse from Boise. Jesse,
hey.
Welcome to the CLNS postgame show here. We're glad to have you on the line, man. How you doing tonight?
Yeah, man. Good. How are you guys?
Great.
Walking on air. Feeling great. 2-0.
Oh, yeah.
2-0.
Feeling great, man. I mean, the first game was something special, but this team just keeps overachieving, really. But I feel like, how do you guys feel? Do you think LeBron can play better than he did tonight?
Better, yes, right. I feel like he could play better than he did tonight because he had 6 turnovers.
Sure.
a lot of his scoring output was in the first half. I didn't think like his sort of the balance he played, but he could definitely play better defense. I know he had that outrageous block in Rozier, but I actually just in general don't feel like he's played really the kind of defense he's capable overall in this series. Like, he's getting blown by. I mean, yeah, he got that block, but like a couple of other times Rozier just got right past him, and not even just him. It just seems like he's sort of conserving his energy. So that's an area where I think he could improve. I definitely don't think like this is the apex of what LeBron is. Some of those shots he was hitting, like, yeah, it's hard to say like, oh, he's going to hit a higher percentage of those kind of shots. There's no question about that. But if you're just saying like overall game, yeah, I do think he could do better.
I thought our defense is, our collective defense is great. I think that I don't know if we can play better than what, I don't know. I mean, our defense is just so good.
can I hit
Farley show? I was just going to say, it's just like the Chris Farley show on Saturday Night Live back in the day where, you know, he's like, you know, remember that time when you were so awesome at defense? And you're
right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that, you know, because,
yeah, I know.
It's unbelievable what they're doing out there.
Yep. With these kids, man, it's great. Go ahead.
I want to address a narrative, though, that you sort of brought up at the start of your call, talking about how this team is a bunch of overachievers. Are we at the point, like, you know, I'm curious, you know, to your answer to this, John, and Nick, too, if he's listening, but, like, are we at the point where, like, as a fan, you might start feeling somewhat resentful of that? I mean, Jason Tatum's the number 3 pick in the draft. Jaylen Brown's the previous year's number 3 pick in the draft. I understand that, like, they don't have Kyrie, so there was an expectation at the beginning, like, of his injury time that the Celtics weren't going to perform. But I think that was, like, before it had been established, like, how good Terry Rozier is. I don't see this team, like, maybe you say they're slightly overachieving, but I don't think it's fair to say, like, wow, this is the bad news Bears, you know? This is, like, some team of plucky underdogs that are like, no, this is a really talented team, a really deep and talented team. And I think it's like, it's almost a misnomer to just continually harp on how, you know, these guys are really overachieving. I think they're just achieving at this point.
I agree with you. I want to hear what John has to say.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's interesting. It's I don't know if you were kind of bringing this up, Jesse, but, you know, the Rachel Nichols, you know, kind of opinion piece that she ran. And there's, I mean, I think that there's, and you, on the other side of that, you have the Robert Parrish comments on SiriusXM, where he's saying, well, he's getting too much credit. And, it, you know, I think that there's probably in the middle here, there's a very rational place, which is, yes, these players are highly drafted, very talented, very good players who are growing and exceeding beyond their youth. And that's not common. That doesn't happen all over the place. And those guys should get credit. Jaylen Brown should get credit for being, you know, really going toe-to-toe with LeBron James. You know, Marcus Smart should get credit, in my opinion, being the best player in a game where LeBron James was in it. You know, you know, those things, those matter. But on the other hand, there's a system that allows those guys to be who they are. There's a reason why Aaron Gordon, who was picked ahead of Marcus Smart, isn't doing these things. There's a reason why, you know, fill in the blank, Ben Simmons. There's a reason why Ben Simmons is at home right now and Jaylen Brown is getting buckets in the face of LeBron James. I mean, it's because there's a system, there is a general manager who is able to pull off a Nets trade. They have a fabulous coach. I mean, it's possible to not say there's one reason for all this success. There's many reasons for the success, you know, and it's not just – it's LeBron. It's, you know, it's LeBron James. It's Michael Jordan. It's Larry Bird. It's broader than that, and I just think it requires more nuance than probably sports media in 2018 is prepared for.
I guess for me, and you know, before the Philadelphia Boston series started, I picked Boston for the simple reason that I didn't think Philadelphia would be ready for playoff basketball on that level, and I sort of felt justified in the result in that. But now I'm torn between the dual poles of what percentage of credit to give the Celtics for being up 2-0 in this series versus like wondering how good Cleveland is considering what happened with Indiana. And I know that they destroyed the Raptors, but then that's like an enigma to me too. You know what I mean? Like, so I guess where I'm at is like, I just hear everyone saying, well, the Celtics are overachievers. And as a fan of a team, like, I don't really care because I'm on the outside of it. But if I was a Celtics fan, I'd feel a little bit insulted by that at this point. I mean, these guys are, like, they're good. And, yeah, Brad Stevens is a genius. I think that, like, he's sort of nationally getting the majority of credit for this. And I guess I'm starting to push back a little bit just on the side of the players in the way they're playing a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I was just gonna say
you can't go as far as this team has with just having scheme. It's never happened. It's never going to happen. It takes players to do that. And I think you're right, Calvin. I mean, this is absolutely the players growing to the task. I mean, the Celtics were running schemes last year, but they didn't have the players to accomplish what they're doing now. Now they have the players. And look at what they're doing. I mean, it's the same coach, and maybe he's better this year, but he's not this much better. The players are that much better, and I think that's – you have to tip your cap to that for sure.
And the one thing that I had to say is, like, I did not expect Brown and Tatum to be this good this quickly, and that's one of the reasons why I – overachieving is the word that I probably should not have used, but, you know. So, anyway.
I didn't mean to call you out. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. It's all good, man. No worries. I mean, but I'm going to let y'all go and get to some different callers because this is probably a boring conversation.
No. It's a good conversation.
Yeah. I'll be calling in more, hopefully, you know, for the next 8 games or whatever it is. So.
Good stuff.
All right, man.
I love it.
Take it easy, guys.
Thanks, all right. Jesse.
All right.
Appreciate your call.
Yo. Yeah, man. Thanks.
All right. Hey, Calvin, before we take the next call, I want to throw something in. I'm not sure if you're following your Twitter feed, but apparently Ty Lue in the post game accused, this is from Mark Murphy, he says, Lou accused Celtics of, quote, gooning the game up. Okay, and then I got tweeted from another Horseman Nathan sent something to me. He said, he also said that Boston has proven they don't play well on the road. Thought that was an interesting quote, too. So Ty Lue is making a name for himself, apparently. One, the issue of gooning up the game, accusing the Celtics of doing that, and then two, obviously, you know, trying to throw in their face that they haven't played well on the road, ignoring the fact that the Celtics won Game 3 in Philly less than a week ago, or a little more than a week ago. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, here's the thing. Yeah, here is what gooing the game up is like. As I would think of it, normally speaking, I would think of gooing the game up as like slowing the clock down, right? Taking as much time as you can off the possessions, reducing the possessions, locking the ball up, playing everybody back on possessions. Not ever trying to take advantage of your fast break. The Celtics weren't doing that. They gooed the game up by intercepting passes, like. Maybe throw better passes. That's how I would respond to Lou in this particular scenario. It's like they gooed the game up because the Cavaliers couldn't shoot them out of the sort of semi zone that they were playing. You know, put more shooting on the floor. Maybe if you're trying to ungoo the game, like that's on you as a coach. So look, I didn't think like what they were doing was trying to slow the game down to any degree, other than the fact that they didn't create enough space for themselves to run their offense. But that's a coaching issue. So to say that they gooed the game up, it's almost like you're speaking poorly of yourself, in my opinion.
It's yeah, absolutely. And let's remember who did the shove in the back with the guy in the air. I mean that wasn't Al Horford that was doing that. It wasn't even Marcus Smart. It wasn't Marcus Morris. It was his guy, J.R. Smith, that was doing it. You want to get upset about you know when Morris is lying on the ground and screaming in Tristan Thompson's face? You want to get upset because LeBron ran into Tatum's shoulder? I mean, that sounds like a desperate coach. It sounds like a coach who's coaching for his job right now and knows that if his team can't turn some things around, he's going to be not only on his team going to be on vacation, but he's going to be looking for a job. And if that's the case, then okay, might as well in desperate times call for desperate measures. But I feel like they're poking the bear. And they may, you know, while you expect usually the momentum would carry to Cleveland and wanting to fight back and you know, really show their home fans they're ready to get after it, these sort of comments will sit with this team and the way that they play. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the Celtics be the aggressor in Game 3. Let's just hope that we don't see Tony Brothers and Scott Foster in tow.
I'm gonna have to push back slightly. I mean, I wouldn't be me if I didn't do this on the LeBron Jason Tatum thing because, I mean, Jason Tatum had his arms extended horizontally. Like you're gonna get that foul called on you in that position almost every time, even if the other guy runs into you, just based on the position of your arm. So I did not think that was like a poor call. Maybe, you know, if you want to say like LeBron was somewhat at fault for his own injury, and that's I'll buy that part, but like. I don't know. Maybe it's because I got in an argument with my roommate about whether or not that should be a non-call, but
no,
I definitely
don't me, that. Yeah, don't misunderstand me, Calvin. I think it's a foul. I mean, it was definitely a foul. I guess what I mean is it wasn't a dirty play. It was a guy was out of position and they collided. You know, it wasn't like he was going into any sort of intent to injure. I mean, if anything, Tatum was more out of control in this game than any other game I've seen him in a while. And that was emblematic of his play, I thought, other than that stretch where he got hot in the second quarter. He really was out of control in many instances tonight. And I thought that was just him being awkward. And, you know, it was unfortunate LeBron got hurt. But, you know, I don't know that there was nothing untoward about that. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate he got hurt. But, you know, it was as you said, it was definitely a foul, clearly a foul. Yeah. Just not something dirty,
right,
you know, or gooting up the game, right?
Right. So did you read, out of curiosity, did you read intent to injure? I'm sorry, my dog is being out of control. Did you read intent to injure on that push? Because I sort of thought Van Gundy overreacted a little bit, just because, especially like saying that it should be a flagrant two. I didn't see it that way, and mainly because I didn't think the push was hard enough. I thought he was trying to get him to miss the shot, not necessarily trying to injure him, because, again, I didn't think the push was hard enough to sort of justify, like, the 5 minutes of outrage they sort of spent in that moment. I understand why Smart got mad about it afterward, and I definitely, like, I definitely think that, like, only Smith should have gotten the technical foul because he shoved Marcus Smart, and Marcus Smart simply reacted to that. So I'm sort of, like, on that side when it comes to that, but I definitely was not as, like, this is an outrageous flagrant attempt at, you know, to the degree where, like, you know, swinging your arms down on someone's head. It wasn't the same thing to me. It was a little bit of a shove trying to get him to miss the shot. That's all it was, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think the issue is that when a guy's in the air and any sort of intent to push or alter, you know, in a clear motion that has nothing to do with really the play, I think it's clearly a flagrant. Now, was the push hard enough? Did it send him? You know, I think the question, I think what I took from what Van Gundy was saying is that there's a lot of calls that are called flagrants, flagrant one or flagrant two, that are really just basketball plays. Someone's going for the ball and their hand comes down and hits someone's head. Does that mean that they were intending to hit somebody in the head, or does it mean they missed the ball? And it seems like a lot of calls in the NBA, they lean towards a flagrant because, you know, as you said, the arms going down or whatever. But a play like that, you're much more likely to have a really significant, dangerous injury than, you know, somebody getting bonked on the head with an arm. Now, yeah, you could get a concussion, you could get, you know, something, broken nose or whatever, but that's like, that's how, you know, Gordon Hayward stuff happens, you know? And I think that's what he was trying to say is, like, we spend all this time talking about these fouls that are questionable whether or not they really should be flagrants. That's one where you really could have a dangerous situation, and we're, you know, it's kind of, oh, well, ho-hum, it's a flagrant one. I could see the argument for the flagrant, too. I thought it's worthy of a conversation, but I don't know what a flagrant one and flagrant two is anymore, because the stuff I look at and say, well, that can't be a flagrant at all, and that's where they go with it. So, you know.
Well, see, my counter to that, though, is that play, the little shove in the back, is also sort of something that happens all the time. Guys trying to fly in for offensive rebounds, the guy gets pushed forward. You see it. I would venture to guess that someone gets pushed in the back, 40 times a game or more. I think in that particular case, it was a scenario where there was just one guy under the basket, and there was a lot of open space there. So sort of the view of it was really obvious, and also sort of like it was you can argue, or like in other cases where guys get pushed in the back, like the other guy is like trying to get an offensive rebound, where like in this case it was like they were already too late, right? Like the ball was going to go in. So like the circumstances are the only thing that makes that different to me than a million other pushes. But the push itself, it wasn't that far off of, especially for how hard it was, not really that far off of pushing that happens all the time in basketball games. And then usually those are not even called fouls, let alone flagrant. So I guess.
Yeah, but I think, go ahead. Finish your point. Sorry.
Well, I think that you have to go about it one or two ways. You either have to play the result, right, and determine how you're going to react. And I think they do that sometimes, right, where certain guys, like, run into each other, and then they don't call the foul, but then the first guy, like, loses the ball out of bounds, and then the whistle comes, like, you know, 5 seconds later, and it's just only a foul because the other guy dropped the ball. If you're going to do that, fine. And the other thing is just to, like, yeah, I don't know. I just think it was a regular foul. I do not, and or maybe a flagrant one at worst. But I don't see how there's any argument for a flagrant two, considering the, you know, again, how that's a common play. Relative, other than the fact that he was the only guy there flying in, that like the severity of the push itself was like it wasn't bad.
Yeah. I think it is circumstantial. I think a lot of those plays are circumstantial, and I think in that case, you know, it was certainly – it was more about where Horford was coming from, the speed and the velocity with which he was coming in, and it was kind of a play that was over. Not over, but
yeah.
I felt, you know, he was going to get the dunk, you know, and the only way that someone was going to stop him is if someone pushed him from behind and did something that was not going to be a basketball play. And I think that's where, you know, you do see guys kind of, you know, going for rebounds or whatever, but it's, you don't have the speed and velocity thing. And I think that's what amplifies it. You know, because you're right. You see pushes all the time. There's all kinds of pushes. You know, I think it was just that speed and velocity that added that degree to it that made them look at it a little bit differently. But, you know, and you know, maybe JR wasn't doing didn't mean to do something untoward about that. Because there's certainly intent is part of, you know, the conversation when you talk about those flagrant fouls. The issue, too, is JR is a punk. You know, he's done this stuff before, most famously 3 years ago, got into the whole mix with Jay Crowder and, you know, elbowed him in the face, and it was, you know, an ugly situation in the end of a Celtics being swept by the Cavs in the first round in Brad's first playoff run. But I don't think that was the reason why they called. I think, you know, I think probably flagrant one was the right call, but it was, you know, again, it's hard to tell. It really is. So I don't know. I'm sure they'll have to go back in the lab and try to look at that call. You know, all of those calls, those flagrants again, and try to figure out how to do it better. I don't know if they can, but we'll see. Let's go to another caller. Let's do this. We got Isaiah in Jersey calling in on the line. Isaiah, how you doing? Welcome to the Celtics postgame show.
What's going on, fellas? How's everything with you?
Good. How's it with you?
I'm all right, Calvin. What's going on, man? Nice to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, good to be on with you, too.
Okay.
Yeah, good chat with you, Isaiah, man.
I kind of like the way things went down tonight, wouldn't you say? The way we just went out there and looked like the big brother out there. The way that we didn't really sweat what was going on when LeBron went off, we didn't panic. We kind of acted like LeBron did at the podium after last game. We weren't worried at all, not a bit. We let him go out, do his thing, and then we just reeled him back in slowly and surely, and then they just ran out of gas in the third quarter. I mean, we really beat him up in that third quarter, offensively and defensively. We took it to the hole continuously on them, and all they kept doing was taking threes. I mean, I don't know. This looks like it's over before it even begun. I thought we had a chance to win in seven, but this looks like it might only go, what, five?
I told you we'd get this call. I mean, I said it earlier. I'm not. I need to see a game in Cleveland, man. I need to see one before I'm just like, all right, well, this is going to go five. You know, I think this happened with the Milwaukee series where I did game two and, you know, everyone's calling and telling me how it was over. And, yeah, they ended up winning that series, but it ended up being a long series. I don't know that this is over yet. I don't know. I'm just preaching caution here. I understand why you're enthusiastic, but I'm not there yet. Maybe John is. Maybe John's there.
I shouldn't be. You shouldn't be. Calvin, of all people, you should not tell me to preach caution, Laker fan. Let the Celtics get theirs off. No Laker fan is going to tell me to preach caution. Get out of here with that. I'm going to go ahead and talk to the Celtics fans, and I'm going to say that that this is not the Milwaukee series. At least Prunty had an ace in the hole that he could throw out there that athletically changed the tide. Cleveland has nothing. They tried their one ace in the hole, which was Tristan Thompson, starting the game, and it didn't work. I mean, we even dug deep for Greg Monroe, and although Monroe didn't score as much as we would have liked, he continuously drew fouls against them. We beat them up offensively and defensively tonight. And although preaching caution is because we're all bowing down to LeBron and how great he is, greatness doesn't last forever. And this is more than a chink in the armor. This is a crack. And we are all the way through this. We just need to stay the tide. Play our game, because if we play our game, there is nothing they can do to stop us. We are younger, stronger, more athletic, and better at every position except for LeBron.
Yeah, it's so funny to me that you mentioned Monroe, because when you said at the beginning of your call that the Celtics aren't panicking, or they didn't panic at all in that game, and how impressed you were with it, my immediate thought in my head was like, yeah, you could tell they didn't panic because they played Greg Monroe in the third quarter of that game. Like, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But Calvin, wouldn't you say this is the series of all the series that we've played so far where Greg Monroe makes the most sense, especially if they're going to go Tristan Thompson? Tristan Thompson isn't an offensive player that we would have to worry about. So if you're going to go body for body and just simply body him up and let Greg Monroe do what he does, which is grab rebounds. I mean, granted, those pick and rolls were rough, but all he has to do on those pick and rolls is fall back, because I can live with LeBron taking those jump shots. It's when he tries to play man-to-man defense and gets blown by that's the problem. But I think of all the series that's going on, this is the series that Greg Monroe actually makes sense.
I hear what you're saying in terms of like trying to limit his offensive rebounds, but from the outside, I still didn't love it because I saw them pulling him into pick and rolls repeatedly. The second he was on the floor, they were just targeting him on those pick and rolls, and I felt like I don't know. I'm an affirmed disbeliever in the plus minus, so I don't know what his actual plus minus was, and I don't care.
It might
have been negative. But he only played 6 minutes, and he sort of played in a time of the game that wasn't – it was sort of reserve heavy anyway. But my main thing about playing Monroe is just that the Celtics get out of their offense with him on the court, and it becomes the Greg Monroe show. And then on the other end, his defensive value is not enough to make up for that. So I think he was fine in this game. He held his own. But it's not something that I would go to consistently, and I feel like when the Celtics do go to it, It's just sort of feels gimmicky to me. Every time Monroe's out there on the court, it just feels like, let's just try this for a little bit.
Yeah, but you're kind of missing my point. Because the point isn't that Greg Monroe is on the floor. The point is that we're that deep that we can match your move by putting Greg Monroe on the floor. That's my point. Like, there's no matchup that Cleveland has over us besides LeBron. We have every other physical matchup. Then we have, and we have it offensively and defensively. So that was my point in Greg Monroe, that we could even – this is a series that makes sense for him, and he's like the 11th guy off the bench.
No, but that's my point, because there's no reason for Greg Monroe to be in the game when you have Al Horford. Like, you can give him a break by putting Baines in. Like, Cleveland doesn't have a guy in the game that requires you to counter with Monroe in the first place. I guess, and that's really what I'm saying about that. I mean, I guess it's nice to get him the minutes since you did sign him, in a way fun to see him just playing old school post basketball, but it's certainly like not what the Celtics want to do at their best. And it's not like Greg Monroe is a great passer from that position to the point where he's like getting them a lot of 3-point shots. That really doesn't happen either. I don't really see the point of it other than again, like, you bought the toy, so now you want to play with it. Other than that, like, I don't really see the point of it. But that's just me.
Yeah, but we're kind of getting in the weeds here. I guess what I'm saying is the caution that you're saying that you should preach is only because you're bowing down to the altar of LeBron. And we don't. And the way we're playing this series, why should we?
We have every physical
advantage on the court. And the one ace and all, like, what are they going to play? They're going to play, what's his name, who else do they have to turn to?
They could play Hood more. They could play Clarkson more. They could play a more guard-heavy lineup if that's what they wanted to do. But I don't necessarily think that, we have to play a bunch of different dudes if I'm Cleveland. I think you also have to factor in the fact that the Celtics haven't shot as well on the road. I think that there are more things they can do, like off-ball trying to with more motion, trying to get guys free. I think that they fell into a predictable pattern with Love, trying to get him at the ball at the mid post in a way like if you get Love moving more. I don't know. There are minor adjustments you can make besides like who are we going to play now. I think it's like that's a sort of simplistic way to look at it, but I don't necessarily think that that's how Lou's, not that Lou's like the greatest coaching genius in the history of the NBA, but I think there are adjustments that can be made.
Isaiah, if I could just jump in real quick. Part of the issue though is, when they go small, you're playing to the Celtics' advantage, I think, is part of the problem. And so Cleveland has a lot of guys they can throw in that fit that small, you know, quote unquote, you know, kind of stature, but they don't have, they're small, but they don't have the ability to play both ends. Right. That was the sin of game one for them, is that they have guys who can shoot. They have guys who can score. They can do that. But on the other end, they're at a worse disadvantage because Jason Tatum now is able to play. And, you know, we saw tonight, Tatum got pulled off the floor because defensively he wasn't having a great game. He was getting pushed around. He was, you know, the switches weren't working well for him. If they go small and they go back to, you know, the more guard heavy lineup and swing, you know, swing levy heavy lineup,
see,
it feels like you're playing Boston's game then, not playing Cleveland's game. And I think partly what Isaiah is talking about, it sounds like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Isaiah, it sounds like we have the flexibility to play any style that you want to play. We have that at our disposal. It's a question of, you know, now he's played his card. And I'm not sure, and while you're right, scheme-wise, there's some things that, some different things Lou could do in terms of makeup of who's on the court. I'm not sure he has, you know, another card to play.
See, I'm not sure that I agree.
They lost the first game by 25, and their adjustment only netted them, what, 11 extra points? And LeBron really had to score. I watched LeBron after the first quarter, and I said, and I was amazed by what he did. But by the third quarter, you could see him laboring as he was still scoring. And you could say to yourself, he really had to get 50 points for them to win. And if he's going to have to play that hard, the only solace I say is that when they go back to Cleveland, those role players are going to play better at home. That's it. Other than that, schematically, I don't think that there's really much they can do, because we can play any way that they want to play and play it better than them.
See, I don't agree with the part that you said about them playing better big. I think that it's, you know, they hadn't really played big much all year. They switched to a big heavy lineup against Toronto because they were playing Valanciunas, they were playing Jacob Poeltl, they were playing Ibaka, they were playing a bigger team that sort of wanted to play big, and they countered with their guys. And I sort of feel like Lou has stuck with this old school Cleveland lineup that I don't think works at all very well against the Celtics, or against even most of you. I think they are better when they play small. They give LeBron more space. I think that the fact that they're playing Thompson, we talked about it earlier, is clogging the lane somewhat for LeBron. I don't understand why he's getting 30 minutes. Even Nance, like I would rather play Nance, because at least he's a rim runner and he's going to sort of get out of the way, you know, to a greater degree than LeBron. But even then, I don't think I would live with Al Horford ISOs if that's what it's going to be. If I'm Cleveland, I think that the fact that the Cavaliers don't have enough ball handling to me is a bigger issue outside of LeBron. And you saw it tonight, like they're turning the ball over weight. You're not gonna win very many games where you lose the turnover battle 17-5. I think that could change if they do enough right, you know, smart things. The Celtics could also be a little bit more careless with the ball, which they have been at times. They could be sloppy with the ball sometimes, which would get Cleveland some easy baskets, something else they need. I don't think the role players will necessarily shoot as well on the road. I think there are avenues for Cleveland to get back in this series, I guess is what I'm saying to you. And I don't think it's just because I'm terrified of LeBron only. I mean, that's certainly a part of it. I'm not going to lie. I would be terrified of LeBron. But I don't think that's the only thing. I just don't think that they're playing, you know, the smartest version of themselves. And I guess I don't have complete confidence in Lou for them to achieve that, but I think that they do have things that they could do.
There are a bunch of role players on Cleveland's team, and they only play one style. That's LeBron has to make all the plays and get them the ball where they need to. They don't have enough playmakers on their team. Everything has to run through LeBron, and that's not going to work with this Celtics team. As you've already seen, we're well-schooled at putting up a wall in transition. By this time, we've done it with Giannis, and then we had to do it with Ben Simmons, and now we're doing it with LeBron. So we're limiting them with the transition defense. And then on top of it, we disrupt everything that they do. If you're watching all the off-ball screens, we're getting under picks. We're going over. The way that we're switching and hedging, I mean, the Celtics are playing masterful defense. And that's the real reason why we're winning, because those role players can't get off of the guys that are defending them in order to run the plays that they do have. How many times has LeBron had to just stand there with the ball and watch cutters go by because the Celtics are draped all over them? And you even heard Ty Law say it tonight on the podium when he said that the Celtics are – I think you guys just mentioned it, right, that the Celtics are –
Going it up.
Masterful job of going it up. That's exactly what we're supposed to do, make it like fudge for them. And the problem is they have old guys. So those old guys don't want to make that second and third effort to get over the screen the way Marcus does at 24. That's the real difference. They're old, and they need to pack it up. And the way the Celtics are playing, they're flexing on them. And there's nothing that Cleveland can do moving forward. I'm not saying Cleveland's not going to win some games in this series. I expect them to, fully. I expect LeBron to go down swinging. If he does it, and I'm completely right, and they do it in five, I will be flabbergasted. I expect them to win a couple of games. But as far as the series is concerned, there are certain matchups that the Cleveland can do nothing about. Kind of like Philly had offensive players that they couldn't do anything on the defensive end. Just like you're watching Houston last night with Golden State. They have players that play either one way or the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And the Celtics trump that because they play both. They're not only going to close, shut you down on the defensive end, but we're going to take you on the offensive end and give you the business. That's where they got Cleveland. That's where they got Cleveland beating me. The only other functional team I see in the NBA that can play the way the Celtics do is Golden State. And the way it looks like, I think that's going to be the real finals.
Yeah, I think
and
you're
I'm
right.
Jumping out the window. I'm jumping out the window and saying it. How about that, Calvin?
I love it.
All right, well, hopefully it's just like a one-story window. I don't want to see you get hurt.
Exactly. Thank you.
Isaiah, hey, thanks, man. Appreciate your call. We're gonna get some other guys in here. Love having your stuff. You're great. Great on. Every, call in again game three. They'll love having you.
I got you, fellas. Go Seas.
I love it. Thanks, Isaiah. Sorry about that. Calvin, my Skype kicked me out of the show here for a little bit, so
I didn't realize.
I got kicked out and I'm back.
Nice.
What can you do? Oh my gosh. Hey, let's go to the 617 area code. Welcome to the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. Are you there with us? 617? Apparently not. All right. Well, maybe you're just listening. Let's go to the 614 area code. Welcome to the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media.
Yeah, it's Woody. It's your Thunder from down under.
Woody! Hey, man, long time no chat. How you been?
I'm good. I'm obviously very good. I'm towards euphoric. I've got the game gets played between 10:30 and 1 o'clock here on the Tuesday, it is. On the Wednesday, whatever it is. I've had myself my first beer. I had it with 2 minutes 49 still to play. I wasn't going to have one. I've had a couple of beers. I've shouted myself a lovely ham and cheese sandwich and a bowl of chips as a fine dining celebration. And there we go. And now I've got an very important question for you, John or Justin?
Yeah, it's John. Yeah, John's with you. Yeah,
John. Yeah, yeah. John and for Kelvin and all other listeners here, are the Warriors good enough to handle us?
John,
Okay. First of all, Woody, you said how many beers have you had before?
Only on my second one.
There's nothing like being up two zip on LeBron James to make you feel real good. And a second beer, 2-0 on the beers and 2-0 on the series, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's some truth in what you're saying in one part in that, in terms of the matchup. Right, I mean the Celtics are almost the best matchup going with the Warriors. Now they're not deep enough, as currently constituted, but you add those two guys,
and they're ready to go at them, I think. Do they have enough to go at them this year? That's the million-dollar question, and I'm not sure. After watching how they dispatched Houston in that game, in the fourth quarter of that game, I'm not as eager to get to the finals. I kind of want to enjoy the conference finals right now. What about you, Calvin? Do the Warriors have enough to slow down the Celtics?
I mean, like you said, matchups factor into it. I don't know. You might be annoyed at this, but I actually feel like just for that particular team, the Celtics might have been better off with Avery Bradley than because he posed such a difficult matchup, like coming off screen, staying with his man in a way that, like, yeah, Marcus Smart is a great defender, but sort of like speed is his not Achilles heel, but it's like a slight heel for him as opposed to, like, you know, defending due to a bigger than him. Defending guys who are faster than him is a little bit more of a challenge for Smart in a way that, like, they could really use, like, an Avery Bradley type against a team like the Warriors. Let me ask you this question, though.
Calvin, and look, I purposely get on here to just throw total facetiousness onto the call. You know, the tongue is in the left cheek and the tongue is in the right cheek. You know, the joy of us, what are we, 9-0 so far in the series at home. The joy of seeing each of those is, and you and I, and Calvin too, and even the not every non-Boston supporter knows that we're playing in total bonus time. We're playing with the bookies' money totally, and how far we go is enjoyable. When you watch a game at the time, you know, like you guys, how I go back to 1979 as being a passionate Boston Celtic. So, you know, I told the guy, even when we got back to only six points up, whenever it was, I went, oh, you know, I'm nervous in the stomach and that, but, you know, will the TD Garden crowd bring us home? And then bang, bang, bang. And you could see the air go out of the Cavaliers balloon. And so to, you know, pull away to 14 points or so was just joyous. You know, and that's in the bank. So my point, I said to my barman friend Chris, who's not nearly as passionate of Boston, but he's a passionate Boston man. I said, look, okay, now the deal is they have to win 4 games out of 5 to go to the next round. We have to win 2 games out of 5, and I think 4 games out of 5 is tougher than 2 games out of 5 at NBA playoff level. So yeah. You know, that's where it's at. And you guys have analysed it, Denry. Just a couple of quick points. I watched Scott Van Pelt show, and an analyst was on there, and he said, and this point stood out, our backcourt, 41 points. Their backcourt, 3 points. So that's the total offset of what LeBron does, you know. That's the point. That's a total offset. If we're, you know, Rozier, and at halftime, the panel at halftime said, you know, we needed Rozier and Morris to step up, and sure enough, in the second half, Rozier and Morris, you know, Morris wasn't shooting well in the first half, and I was grinding my teeth and going, oh, damn, damn, and then sure enough, he's done what he required, and so is Rozier in the second half, and we just took control. You could watch it, that the control of the game was ours with LeBron running out of energy. And my point being, if their backcourt, actually their starting three, shoot 11 points between the three of them, well, LeBron's got to shoot 60 points. He's got to have a Larry Bird Atlanta game to offset, and it really crystallised the fact. So, yeah, we got the 2 games in there, and now we go to Cleveland, and if we could scratch and gouge and fight our way, which we will, you know, and finish 1 point ahead in Cleveland, well, yeah, that'll be huge. And I repeat what I said. We're playing with the bookies' money. You guys, we've been on the journey since Gordon Hayward, you know, snapped his ankle. We were all there then, and we've been on the journey of this year. And to see Tatum and Brown's self-belief at this level playing against, you know, we'll call him the all-time second greatest after God, after Larry. you know, and their belief to take him on, and yeah, if they're going to get banged out of the way by him, well, it's not for want of trying. So you got two comers, you know, who have averaged all through the season, have averaged 32 points between them, and now today they've put up 34 between them. You know, the other week it was 49 between them. The other day, you know, they're a total bonus to what we would have expected the minute we started the season. Massive bonus. Jaylen Brown's headed to All-Star status and probably to as state as Tatum. So, you know, it's fantastic to ring in to enjoy with you guys. Here's me, I'm 12,000 miles away from you guys, and, you know, it's a thrill to sit through the four quarters, and then I knew I was going to ring in today and share your joy, share your insights, and Isaiah, Kelvin, your inputs from a, shall we say, in theory, from a neutral standpoint, and Bobby and Nick and all I've probably been listening for 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes, and just so I hear your vision. I've already watched a couple of after game shows with Stephen A. Smith, he just belted the Cavs again. The guy who brought up the point about that's hopeless if their backcourt's going to shoot 3 points and our backcourt shoots 41, well, you know, game over no matter who it's against, whoever's playing whoever. And it was interesting to watch that before coming online to then what's good in coming in on a call, coming down the ranks to hear Isaiah or the previous troops have been on the call to get, you know, insights from, you know, how you watch it, you know, how we all watch it from different corners of the world compass.
Absolutely.
Over to you.
Absolutely. Hey, Woody, I'll tell you, it's been a while, man. I'm glad to chat with you here. We're gonna have to get another call in before we got one more to wrap up. But listen, man, you take care. And I think you're right. I think we're up 2-0. And you know what? You can go ahead and crack that third beer if you want, because I think the Celtics could go up 3-0 pretty soon.
Well. That's right. I might have to have the ones for the next round. Start having the drinks for the next round. You know, what the mob with that you know, weak mob from over in California.
That's right. Well, you know, LeBron started shooting 10 hours before game time, and everyone was fawning over that on Twitter today. So I think there's nothing wrong with getting started on the third beer, you know, here four days before game three. I think it's just in honor of LeBron you're doing that. So, but Woody,
exactly.
Good chatting with you.
You guys, too. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. All right.
We will
indeed.
I'll see you in 3 days' time. Talk to you in 3 days' time.
You got it, man. All right. That's Woody from Australia. I love having Woody. Woody goes all the way back, Calvin, back to when Celtic Stuff Live was a live call-in show, and he used to call in, you know, some 10 years ago and talk to us. So Woody's a long time Celtic. I mean, I know he's been calling on the post-game show,
yeah.
But he's a diehard for sure.
Yeah,
love having him.
Let me answer this real quick, because he hit on the notion of bonus time, and I'm just wondering, because I love that concept. I don't know where you're at, but, like, I hate the idea that every fan base has to be disappointed at the end of a season. You know, there's something to say of, like, overachieving or just having a great year and being proud of your team. So, like, I've sort of always been on that note. There's the opposite type is just sort of like championship or bust, or we're going to be miserable. I don't know where you're at with that, but I do wonder, though, about bonus time in the sense of, like, does bonus time ever revert back to regular time? Like, you're up 2-0 right now. You're feeling great.
Yeah.
But if the Cavs were to win the next four games and close you out in six, does that go back from the joy of this series right back to misery? Or, like, if it goes seven, you could probably feel pretty good about that, right? But six at this point would probably be pretty upsetting, I'd imagine. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think that would be hard to put away. You're right. I mean, the expectations can change, but you do have to – come back to the beginning, and then of course it goes back to what your default outlook on life and on sports
right.
is, and there's a lot of people who just want to take the opportunities like that and you know always look at the negative, and Yeah, I would try to look at the positive and say this team shouldn't be in this situation to begin with, or you wouldn't have thought they should have been in this situation, and yet they keep getting better and better. I think you have to look at it that way. I think otherwise it's a very miserable experience as a fan, because you're right. I mean, I think it's about expectations and what can you reasonably expect your team to accomplish. And the Celtics, talk about house money. I mean, this is something about money. This is a whole neighborhood right here at this point. It's ridiculous, for sure. We got one more caller from the 978 area code. Welcome to the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. You're gonna be our last caller tonight,
John. It's Bobby.
Bobby, hey, what a way to wrap it up, my man. How are you doing, Bobby?
I'm gonna wrap it up all right. Right. I know you guys had the conversation earlier about J.R. Smith, and I can't believe both of you were so dismissive. My jaw is still dropped over that call, because I've been complaining about this for years. So when this hit ahead tonight in a key moment in this game, I nearly lost my mind. And I know it's not going to be something you talk about in the end, because, you know, J.R. Smith's so inconsequential in the outcome of a game, so throwing him out doesn't matter all that much. Flagrant foul, whether it was two or one, was really going to swing the game there either way. So the fans who wanted the win got what they wanted there. And, of course, the Celtics did win, so it didn't matter all that much. But just as a fan of basketball, when are they going to get these flagrant foul calls right? There's no definitive statement on what the difference between a one and a two is. It seems like everybody has their own opinion. Calvin talked about earlier how he thinks it needs to be an excessive shove. Well, I look at that and see plays like Isaiah Thomas's elbow on Justice Winslow last year, and Zach Randolph's elbowing someone on the Celtics a similar way a few nights later. And I look at the way Smith shoved Horford in on the baseline and say that was way more dangerous, way more of a non-basketball play than what those guys did. And if we're just talking about non-basketball plays, what gets more non-basketball than just completely shoving a guy from behind into the baseline as he's going up for a dunk? This wasn't a behind-the-back foul, chasing a rebound, anything like that. He was going up for a dunk, and Smith just sent him out of control, flying down. And luckily, Horford was able to land fairly safely, but there was a very good chance he didn't there, and that was just a disgrace to me. I hope the NBA takes a look at suspending Smith, and it's not going to play a big role in the outcome of this series. I just think it's the integrity of the game. If you're going to protect your players, you need to throw Smith out of the game right there.
I would definitely take it to you with your statement of out of control falling down. I think it's a vast overstatement. The idea of quote basketball play is in things that are non-basketball plays, in my opinion, are mostly things that are happening during dead balls. Like, you say it's a non-basketball play, but we discussed how it's a thing that happens all the time. By the way, it's not even just something that happens on rebounds. Guys get shoved in the back on shots all the time as well. The guys, again, trying to get away with a little extra contact.
Trying to get injured, though. Because I see similar plays like that all the time where someone goes down and doesn't get up, and we say that's one of the dirtiest plays I've ever seen. I've seen a number of plays that look just like that.
Look, I've seen a number of plays just like that that don't even get called fouls. So I think to some degree, as I said earlier, there has to be an element of playing the result, in even though nobody wants to hear it, in these situations. The same way, like, if two guys have insight, and I use the example, if two guys are, like, chasing after a rebound, right, and one guy bounces off another guy and the other guy goes up the court, you don't call the foul. But if the first guy drops the ball out of bounds, all of a sudden you have to blow your whistle and call that scenario. I think considering what happened, and again, how – I'm not saying it wasn't a foul. You call the foul. But the notion of, like, throwing J.R. Smith out of a game or giving a guy a small shove in the back that didn't result in any physical damage to the other player is in a playoff game is absolutely excessive, in my opinion.
So where do you draw the line between a one and a two? Because for me personally, is it a necessary play? There was nothing necessary about that shove from behind there. Nothing was going to come out of that. It wasn't a challenge to the shot. It was just an intentional foul because Smith was behind him and had no chance to stop the play.
I think necessary is a bad term to use in this scenario, just because, like, you can argue and anything that results, like, any sort of arm swing or any sort of play that results where a guy's going to make a shot anyway, you can say is unnecessary, right? Like, stepping on a guy's foot, you can say is unnecessary. But, like,
to me, it's more about like the excessiveness of the physical, like the violence itself is what like differentiates between a one and a two. How violent was the action in and of itself? Like, was it a tiny shove in the back? Then no, it's probably not a flagrant two. Did he, even if Horford like punches him in the back, or if he elbows him in the back, or if he kicks him in the back, even if Horford lands on his feet, then yeah, then I'm probably right there with you. But the amount of violence is not recompense with the idea of giving someone a flagrant two and kicking them out of the game. Just because
plays right into my point too, in particular, the disagreement we have over this, because it feels like referees are in the same exact boat. It feels like they all have the same definition of what the difference between one and two is. And I do agree with Jeff Van Gundy in the fact that I think people have been thrown out of games for less than this. I look at a swinging elbow standing out on the perimeter just because you're trying to create some space out there as more of a necessary play. And I know you don't want to go with necessary as the definition there, but that's just a basketball play, trying to get around a guy, creating some space. If an elbow hits a head, you're out of the game. And that seems to be what they are basically going with on flagrant twos, even though I think a play like this could be as dangerous, if not more. And I'm with John right here, what he was saying earlier. Horford goes down, and we're talking about this as a much different, bigger, like essential defining play of the Celtics season. And I don't think there's any space in that game. I'll ask you this, Calvin. Should there be a place in a game to shove a guy behind going to the rim like that?
Okay, is there a place in the game for it? Yeah, I don't think it's that uncommon. Look, do I love the play? No, but I don't think it's – I think it's there's an element of gamesmanship to it. I don't think it was as uncommon as you seem to be making it out in this scenario. Again, as I was saying to John, I think it was just the fact that he was the only guy there. It was a very obvious play. And I think that's the difference between other sort of plays that don't get called when a bunch of dudes are there and someone's going for a layup in a crowd and the defender pushes him in the back a little to try to get him to miss his shot without the referee. That's the thing that happens all the time in basketball. Do I think that like those pushes are so much softer than J.R. Smith's push and that's in Al Horford's scenario? No, I think it was the speed that Horford was going through, the fact that he had an open lane that everyone could see it, and the how far his arms were extended sort of made it obvious in a way that made it difficult to not call that call. But my issue with your necessity terms is like, let's take Draymond Green, for example. Draymond Green, like jumping in the air to collect rebounds and kicking his legs out. That's an unnecessary play. But should he be called should a flagrant be called every time he does it, even if he doesn't make contact with anyone? No, you have to legislate the result. Of what
I think doing that eliminates it, though, and he was suspended for that play, and there was a reason for it, because there's no place in the game for something like that. I know we're up against it at 12:30 here, but, John, I'll ask you, do you think they're going to look at suspending Smith for that?
I don't think they will. I think I agree with you in terms of the concept of where the league is right now with that call. And I think they need to take – we saw with Paul George. You know, we saw with Gordon Hayward. I think, you know, they got to look at that. But in terms of the micro level of where do we stand here between games two and three, I don't think they're going to do anything about it. I think they're going to just let it be. The outcome was what the outcome was and try to leave it at that, which I think is unfortunate, but right now, it doesn't seem that the rules right now are in the game to support that, and I think that's a mistake by the league. It's not a basketball play. It shouldn't be a basketball play. And as I said, I don't think the shove itself was egregious. It was where it was used, and I think that's where that's why they make those calls at the arena as opposed to making them on the replay far away. They can see the context of the play itself. I don't think that there's anything in replay or anything after the fact that will cause them to change, their look at this, which, you know, for the Celtics is unfortunate. But I think also in the sense of what should be a flagrant two versus a flagrant one, I'm not happy with where the league is right now in that. And don't even get me started on double technicals. I think that's just ridiculous too, but that's for
well, either
story,
way.
As you said, it's 12:30.
it's too bad we had to talk about that so much tonight, but it was necessary, I feel like. And aside from that, so much mental toughness by the Celtics tonight, because early in the game, I felt like they were out of it. I didn't think they were going to be able to stand back up, and again, they proved me wrong and just completely blew by Cleveland when it came to just persistence and fortitude and everything else. I'm not going to say the series is over yet, but they did themselves a massive service tonight by pulling this out. It felt like game three against Philly, felt like game five against Philly. They didn't have it. They weren't there at the end, but they were able to pull it out and just make enough big hustle plays to get out of it, and it's going to do them a major service, like I said. So great show tonight, guys. I'll leave it there, and go Celtics.
I love it. Thanks, Bobby. Appreciate having you join us here at the end. Calvin, we're going to wrap this up. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm on the West Coast. It's only 9:30 for me, so I'm good. So, but I don't want to keep you too much longer. I understand it's late. Obviously great win for the Celtics. Great defensive effort team-wise. You know, nobody really had a terrible defensive game. We, you know, except for, like I said, a few minutes of Korver getting open. If they play defense like this in Cleveland, it might not even matter if Cleveland shoots better and the Celtics, you know, role players shoot worse. If they can hold them, you know, down again like this, it might take a heroic LeBron effort to get it done. And I don't know. We'll see if they have it. But I think Cleveland probably takes the next one. But I think that the Celtics could be right there for game four.
I think you're right. This was, you wonder how much more supernova, you know, LeBron can you get? You know, he did have a triple double, but you know, he was 16 for 29. He had 10 rebounds, 12 assists, but also 6 turnovers. So a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, which isn't bad. But he was also a -9 for the game, third worst on the team behind Jeff Green's -17 and Kevin Love's -10. Not great.
Poor second half.
So,
poor second half as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So, we're going to see what's happened in game three. We're going to see who the officials are in game three. I don't think we're going to see Tony Brothers and Scott Foster in game three. I think that'll be a game four specialty to get this series back to Boston. But regardless of what happens, they're going to make this thing go on. Haven't seen both those guys play, referee in game one against Houston at Golden State. I think we're probably going to see them in game four back in Cleveland. Again, Tony Brothers, last 8 games, he's ref the Celtics have been in 0-8 in that time. So, see how that goes. I'm over the joyed 13-point win. The Celtics win 107-94. Again, this show is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is the premium essentials brand. They got all the good stuff, the socks, the shirts. You like what you're listening to, go to MackWeldon.com. It's promo code CLNS. You get 20% off your first order. That's not bad. Folks, really glad to have you on with us tonight. Everyone who called in, really appreciate your phone calls. Tell your friends, listen to the show. We'll be back here on Saturday night when we have another postgame show after game three in Cleveland. Celtics are up 2-0 right now, again with a 13-point win tonight. Celtics are on their way. They're halfway to the NBA Finals. Can you believe it? Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. We will see you all later. Have a good night.